about the Pindians, baby.
Turning geek speak into street speak. This is Computer Ed Radio. And now, Computer Ed.
And we are on the final countdown. Doug and I are at T-minus, well, about 22 hours until Vegas is upon us.
I have an itinerary.
Yeah, I finally got you one.
It's official.
Well, hey, you know, it was official before this. Trust my wallet.
Yeah, but the schedule kept changing. Every time you'd send me a schedule, I'd get a call like an hour later. Never mind, it changed. Throw that one away.
You know, it's really weird when you think about this. I've never been to CES. All these years, and I've never been to CES.
How can you not have gone to CES? CES, Computer Ed Show.
I didn't know it was called that.
Oh, duh.
Well, gosh. Then this should be a big deal. Why not? Why am I not the keynote speaker?
They should be having it here at WGGH.
Why am I not the keynote speaker?
That's a good question.
Next year.
You've not been on top of things.
Next year, I will be the keynote speaker at CES. All right. Let's see what we got here. We're going to start with our SOPA box because, oh, my God. First, thank you to Rabbi Lori for letting me come on. We discussed SOPA real quick with some of his listenership. There is a ton of information out there we want to clarify. Now, to begin with, as I have promised you, I have left no stone unturned, and I have called both of the local federal representatives, a congressman for our area, and I've called both of the senators for the state of Illinois.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, I spoke to the press secretaries of all four and was promised that someone would get back to me by the end of the day. Well, Congressman Shimkus did.
Good.
So, thank you, Congressman Shimkus. I appreciate that. Actually, in fairness, his staff got back to me the end of that day. I got to speak to the congressman Friday.
Right.
Now, we didn't record an interview. Now, the reason we didn't record an interview, and I have his permission to say to tell you about our conversation, he didn't feel it was fair to our listeners to discuss a bill he has not himself had time to go through. And he said the primary reason he hasn't gone through it yet is it's still tied up in committee.
Right, right.
And it looks like it's going to be there for quite some time. Now, he sits on the Energy and Commerce Committee that has a telecom subgroup.
Okay.
So he said more than likely when this gets out of the legislative committee, it will go to his committee. And then his staff is going to be contacting me because then he's going to be able to talk about this more intellectually. But he and I discussed our concerns. I expressed to him the concern about the appearance of due process being wiped out.
Right.
About the fact that we've got basically the movie and record industry acting in the form of police.
Yeah.
He and I talked about the methods they would have to use to acquire these IP addresses. And he even agreed with me when I said these methods are criminal for outside law enforcement. And even in law enforcement, court oversight is required.
Correct.
To do these methods. So he agrees. If these are in place, he said this is a bad bill and it shouldn't go anywhere if
right.
this is in place.
Well, we discussed this last week. It effectively makes them a private police force.
Right. He did, by the way, ask his staff member who's responsible for these aspects. We talked about who do you go to for advice. He said, and he told me, now I'm paraphrasing. I can't say this the way he said it. But essentially, on Capitol Hill, you don't have to go looking for advice. It's unsolicited all the time.
Right. I'm not surprised.
But we've offered it. And because they don't have people that have their feet actually on the ground. They have people that are in major corporations, that are lawyers in major corporations coming to them. These people don't live in the real world, folks. Let's get real
right.
about that. They don't get paid to live in the real world. So they're not like me and you. They don't understand what's going to happen when this
right.
stuff takes place.
Everybody with a specific point of view and the money to afford one or more have lobbyists in Washington. Now, let me just put this little widget in here and then I'll let you continue. I'm not an anti-lobbyist person. I'm an anti-lobbyist abuse person.
Right.
For these people who live in their own bubble and say we should get rid of all lobbyists, you can't get the lobbyist out of politics until you get the politics out of business. As long as Washington or any other governmenting body is able to regulate business and tell private industry how they should behave, private industry's only form of self-defense is two things: a public awareness campaign and a what they consider educating the politicians about their business.
Right.
Well, the people who educate them about their business are always going to be biased for their employer. So it's a self-defense thing for business. I'm not anti-lobby. However, that lobbying has become abusive, and it's one of the things that's just out of control, and it needs to be reined in a bit.
Well, now I'll tell our listeners exactly what I told the congressman. When I talk to politicians about this stuff, I don't care if they're a Republican or a Democrat. I don't care if they're conservative or a liberal. I don't care about the political agenda. We have no political agenda in these discussions. Our agenda is what is best for the computing community.
Right.
And I want to make sure everybody understands this. All of our listeners, I think, already get this. I explained to the congressman. We are anti-piracy here. We don't believe in piracy. There are too many legal, free alternatives to pirate.
I believe in piracy. I saw eye patches for sale just the other day, so I know they're out there somewhere.
Well, I believe they exist.
I think they all moved to Somalia, didn't they?
Okay. You know, there's a story about a Russian cruise line that gave people AK-47s, and they went out looking for Somali pirates.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if we can do that on the internet. Can we get AK-47s and go out looking for software and music pirates? That's cool. Okay, anyway.
I'm sorry. I did that on purpose.
You tried to derail the trolley. The congressman told me his personal guess, and let's make this clear. He made it clear he could be wrong on this. He doesn't think this bill's going to make it to the floor. This bill is drawing more fire every day from all sides. And it is getting to the point that he doesn't believe it's passable.
Yeah. I hope he's right about that because it's garbage.
I hope he is too. Now, on that note, then we're going to move on to a few other
SELPA things. That is no reason, however, to relax and to stop screaming. If you're screaming to your representatives about SOPA and PIPA, keep screaming.
You need to be contacting these people and telling them, do not let this crap go through.
Right.
In fact, I think we need to go a step farther, and we need to ask for real, concrete, proper copyright reform that takes into account the digital media age.
The problem with bad legislation is they're like creatures of the undead. You think you've killed them, and then they come back again, either hidden in other legislation or the really bad parts of them get tucked into new bills somewhere.
I tell you what, let's look at SOPA for a minute. I have no problem with SOPA with a couple of changes. Let me explain to you what the changes are. First, a proper set of due process has to come into play. Let the movie and record industry report a site, but when they report a site, a government-controlled, monitored agency has to perform a proper investigation. That investigation has to go before a court, and a guilt has to be found.
Right.
If that's done, and then the site's removed from the internet, I'll applaud it. But this, we said they're bad, take them down, and they're down doesn't work for me.
Right.
Now, I reported on Facebook about EA, Sony, and Nintendo apparently changing their position on SOPA. And then I want to really thank, who was it that reported this?
And GoDaddy. Now, in fairness, one of these, there's been questions about the commitment of the withdrawal of support from each one of these. But at least there's some movement being made.
Tech Dirt did a really in-deep article on
this. They've been hammering this subject.
And bravo to the people at Tech Dirt. TechDirt.com, by the way, great source for news. Tech Dirt basically went into this, and what they found was this. There are two different lists out there of supporting the bill. And evidently what's happening is people are looking at one list and looking at the other, seeing a name not on both lists and assuming a company has changed positions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of EA has publicly come out and said, now this, by the way, classic Electronic Arts, we have not taken a position. I'm not joking. They have publicly stated that they have not taken a position when it comes to SOPA and PIPA. In other words, what they're saying is, well, we'd like it to pass, but if we say we'd like it to pass, people will be mad at us.
Like that's
and
ever bothered them.
People are getting mad. People are getting mad because the software entertainment industry, by the way, is one of those that's actually come out and supported it. But they're finding examples all over the place of various unions and stuff that are supporting this that the members don't want the support. Tech Dirt drug up a whole bunch of different quotes and stuff from people within these unions that are saying, we don't want this bill. This bill's garbage.
Yeah.
So you need to get out there. You need to get your voice heard. You need to get something done. You cannot sit quietly and allow this to go. And so the great SOPA box campaign continues. By the way, I think we ought to create a little, if we've got an artist that's listening that has some free time, I want you to make a Computer Ed SOPA box signature graphic. And then if you support our position that SOPA needs to be stopped, dead as it is, we are proud to be anti-pirate, but we don't believe SOPA's the method. If you support that position, I think we ought to have these little SOPA box signature tags that we can have people have in forums.
You know, if all the colors hadn't already been taken, we could actually have a colored ribbon campaign. That's the trendy thing to do now.
Ooh, yeah. A colored ribbon.
You know what we'll do?
We'll do
the invisible ribbon campaign. So anybody, folks, anybody you see around you or on the street that does not have a visible ribbon on them,
they must be supporting.
They're
it.
Wearing the invisible anti-SOPA ribbon. So
they're,
that means
they're
that,
supporting
yeah.
Computer Ed's position on the SOPA box.
Perfect.
There we go.
Problem solved.
That's why you are the marketing genius of the show. All right. Our emails are open, computeredradio@gmail.com. You can also join us on Facebook, facebook.com/computered. We did not achieve our push to 500 by the end of the year.
Aw.
I'm disappointed. The push to 500, however, continues. When we reach 500, I will give away the autographed copy of Star Trek Online. Now, in case you didn't know, next week we will not be in studio, but there will be a Computer Ed show. Doug and I gave up much of our afternoon. We discovered we like live radio.
Yeah.
And the reason we like live radio was to put you together a three-hour recorded show. Now, we didn't even record most of this. It was already done. A three-hour recorded show took us about 5 hours.
Right. Right. Yeah, and like you said, that was from a lot of previously recorded material.
You know, people don't realize there's work involved here.
I know.
This show, I figured it out this week. I actually paid attention. I've got 20 hours of prep work into this show. I didn't do any reviews.
Right.
And I've got 20 hours of prep work.
And that's why I said I typically have about
15. Because we love you. We love you.
I mean, it's not that we couldn't come in and talk through 3 hours, but folks, if you think it's chaotic and half unorganized now,
oh my God.
You should hear us ramble without notes. No, you shouldn't. Honestly,
well,
you should not.
After enough cognac, it becomes rambly, that's for sure. Okay, send us in your email, questions, comments, show ideas, anything you like. Let us know what's going on. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, tax season is upon us.
Oh, yay.
Tax preparation software. I have put it to the test for the last week. And you will hear. It's hard to believe it's that early in the year and I've already done this, but I have. This is part of my prep work. I was amazed how fast. And we're going to talk about that. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you, Ozzy, for bringing us back to the Computer Ed Radio Show.
So nice of you to come in.
Monster Radio, WGGH 1150. We're sitting here talking about anything that comes to mind in technology and stuff, getting ready for our big trip and just kind of, I don't know about you, but I'm only about half here today because I'm already thinking about all the packing and stuff I've got to do.
Oh, God.
I haven't even, the laundry's still being done, and when I get home, I have to get all my packing done.
I got to get all the paperwork together. I've got just, it never ends.
Yep.
This is why I've never gone to CES, okay? It's like you have to prepare for 3 weeks for a one-week trip.
Yeah.
Okay, that's crazy. Email can be had at computeredradio@gmail.com. You can also catch us on Facebook, facebook.com/computered. I'm looking here. There was something, and I can't find the stick. Oh, I remember what it was. We'll get to that in a minute. All right, tax software. Tax season is here, and you see the ads all over television how you could use various low-cost or free tax software to quickly do your taxes for you. So I decided to put it to a test. I do this every year, by the way. And I went down to Brian Swinford at Swinford Tax Service in Herron. And I had Brian do our taxes. And we get our return amount or what we're paying, and we get this put together.
Right.
Then I take that information home, and that's what I've been doing since about 5 o'clock this morning, by the way. Dedication to you all. Okay, yeah, Lisa got up this morning, and she goes, what'd you do, get up at like 3 a.m.? Nope, 5.
5. That's much better.
So, anyway, I've gotten a hold of all these different programs from various sources, and I have begun putting them to the test. And I'm not going to give the names because there's no reason to. Because the point was, and this happens every year, none of them were able to match the amount of return that I was able to get by going to a tax professional. And we find this year after year after year. And the reason why is, and I love Brian, I actually interviewed Brian a couple of years ago. We talked about this on the air. The reason why that this takes place is because the tax software is doing everything right, but it doesn't know the right question to ask you.
Right.
And because it doesn't know how to pull, it's like a good interviewer. It's got to be able to pull the information out of you. And without that ability to pull that information, you just miss out on so many things that it can ask you. Gosh, we were talking with Brian when we did our taxes, stuff like interest rate on the house loan that I only saw in two of the tax programs that actually immediately asked me it, and I wouldn't have thought to do that. And various things about mileage. I didn't realize there was a split in the mileage costs. One of the tax programs I used actually used only the new mileage formula, not the old one.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't think is actually quite legal. They might have to fix that. And so it was interesting to watch this take place. Consistently, the difference was around 15 to 18%. 15 to 18% more money back or paying less taxes by going to a tax professional. And that number usually can even go up from there. So my advice to everyone, yes, I know, it sounds like a great idea to go be able to do this real quick. Pay the money to the local professional. You'll usually get back more than what you paid in difference. And the local professional should be done. For Southern Illinois people, Swinford Tax Service in Herron, Illinois. Look him up in the book.
There you go.
Brian's a good guy. He'll take good care of you. Tell him that I sent you and, well, I don't know what he'll do. He might tell you to go away.
Get the computer ed special.
If he, after you say it, if he says OOGA to you, email me and we'll tell you what that means.
Yeah, tell him that Computer Ed Radio told you to give him the promo code Big Ed.
No, the promo code is OOGA. UGA. OOGA.
Okay.
And he'll get that.
It's not who dat?
No, it's OOGA. Brian's a Colts fan. Brian has suffered this year.
Aw.
So we have to be kind to Brian when it comes to football. Brian has suffered majorly.
Has he always
Colts
been,
and Rams.
Has he always been there for you to cry on when your team got spanked?
No, usually he was laughing at me.
Oh, okay.
But, of course, then there was that whole Super Bowl mess that I got to laugh at him. So it's okay. It all works out. Brian's cool. Again, email computeredradio@gmail.com. www.computeredradio.com. There is an absolutely amazing article I found on The Escapist. And if you don't go to Escapist Magazine and watch Zero Punctuation,
shame on you.
You have no idea the pure joy you are missing. Zero Punctuation is an acquired taste, folks, and I will advise this. If you're not an adult, don't waste your time.
Yeah.
But this guy basically talked about how, because he was paying subscription fees to an MMO, he felt obligated to play the game. He couldn't leave the game because he'd invested money. He invested time. You know, we actually said this a few years back. In fact, when we first started talking about free-to-play, I talked about how this was a big advantage of free-to-play. Your obligation to the game began to disappear. And it was interesting to read this article because he's going on and on about how this wouldn't let him spend time in other games. He didn't feel right. And then when he finally quit World of Warcraft, he felt liberated. And he started playing other video games and found out there was other stuff to enjoy.
Yeah, you do. You feel peer pressure and obligation. And it was even worse a few years ago in the old days. I mean, I can remember back when I played the original EverQuest. 72-man raids, and if you were in an upper-level guild, you were expected to be maximum level, you were expected to be top-end geared, and heaven forbid you were a hard-to-find class like an enchanter or a really good wizard that could provide those special key components that you needed. The guild demanded that you be there on certain nights, and you felt obligated. Otherwise, you were going to let down, you know, 20 of your friends.
Well, I love one of the comments he made about he should have realized it when he realized he could do other stuff while he was playing his game to have fun. And I thought of Eve mining. Remember that? But Doug and I used to have these big mining parties on Eve. And we would do stupid things on Vent to keep people's attention.
Right.
But I've read books while I've mined. I've watched movies.
Mining ore in Eve can get
it's
monotonous.
A real job.
It can get monotonous. Yeah, it's too much like real life. But if you want to be exciting, do some low sec mining.
Even that's not that exciting anymore.
It is if you don't have a good wingman.
Well, okay, but if you got a good wingman, he's bored. But this goes back to, and this presses the point, that free-to-play gaming is where it is. Because you don't have this obligation, you don't have this demand on your time. In fact, this point gets pressed home even more by the fact that the current number one game in the world is no longer World of Warcraft. It's now League of Legends. Who, by the way, over the last 3 months has seen a growth of 70%.
Wow.
While WoW is down 14%.
Huh.
Xfire did this whole thing that's really cool.
I knew WoW was down a little bit. Actually, I thought I'd heard 17. No, it was something. Never mind.
Lotro, since going to free-to-play, is showing a 400% user growth and a 300% revenue growth. Since moving free to play, it's from an American economic point of view.
Dear God, what are they doing with all that money? Because I just recently left Lotro and I was seeing zero improvement. All I was seeing was three new cloaks and a new hat being offered in the store every week.
Age of Conan is now free to play, and I just saw an article on that. Doug, you and I might have to go check out Age of Conan again because they claim they fixed the starter stuff. It's actually more fun.
I never played it to begin with.
I thought you did.
Played it because
no, you did Warhammer.
Most
didn't
of the
you?
People that I knew that were anxious and tripping over each other to play in Little Age of Conan fell into one of two categories. Either they were hardcore Conan guys, which I never was. I mean, it was okay, but I was never a big Conan book reader. Or they wanted to see cartoon boobies.
Well, there was that,
and it didn't have an appeal to me.
Microsoft has announced their new game, Flight, which is their next version of Flight Simulator, is free to play.
Wow, nice.
This is one of their major, this is their second major title, Microsoft. Now, they are releasing it, though, in the Microsoft version of free to play. We talked about this with Age of Empires, okay? If I'm understanding what I read correctly, Flight begins where you're flying around Hawaii. Excuse me. And you're going to get a couple of basic planes, and you're going to get Hawaii, and that's all you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
If you want other locations and you want other game or places, and planes, you have to buy expansion packs.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
But still, it's the point that you get the basic game for free. Now, if they'll learn their lesson from Age of Empires and keep the expansion pack prices down, this is a good model. Yeah. I don't have a problem with this model if they do this right.
Yeah, don't do a Dragon Age and charge us $50 for a DLC for a $60 game.
Yeah, no, that's not cool.
Because that was when I parted ways with Dragon Age.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the DLC. It was the expansion pack.
Yeah.
It was a $50 game, and they released a $35 expansion pack. And that's nuts, okay? You just cannot do that. You can't do that. And then Dragon Age 2, of course, proved to be one of the biggest bombs of the year, only possibly beaten out by Duke Nukem Forever, which was the single biggest bomb of the year. Hey, Duke Nukem talks about big explosions. There was one. It was it as it crashed through the base of the sales floor. It was awful. We waited so long.
Yeah. And looking back at it, I think it was doomed to failure no matter what. Because as they pointed out whenever they were saying that the reviews and the criticisms they were getting weren't fair, it brought to light the obvious glaring thing that this was 20-year-old humor. You either had to change Duke or you had to have all of the corny cheeseball 80s stuff.
Right.
And we're beyond that. It's like asking everybody to put on bell bottoms again.
I like my bell bottoms.
I know you do. And that's why the web camera points up high.
I like my high waters, too. Don't pick on me, my pants.
I'm sorry.
I'll take them off.
No. That's fine. That's why we keep the web camera on, so you can't do that stuff anymore.
Hey, I can't. The FCC doesn't monitor that.
Yet.
I can't. Yet. We haven't been on webcams long enough yet. Give them time. They'll be monitoring it soon. Okay, let's see. We got a commercial break coming up here. Let's see what else we got here. We're going to be talking about digital distribution, I believe, next. Yeah, that's what we're going to... Here, this one's a good one. We'll do this one, and then we'll take our break. Microsoft has gone after the largest retailer of computers in the UK. And the reason they have gone after them is this retailer has been printing their own restore CDs for Windows XP and Vista. Microsoft calls this piracy. The argument from the retailer is the fact that, well, no, it's not, because all we're doing is printing restore disks, which are only usable by the people that actually bought the computers. Mm-hmm. And the only reason we're doing this is because you've quit shipping them.
Right.
Which they have, and this is a complaint I share with this company. There is this standard policy now that instead of shipping you a proper set of recovery disks, what they send is a hidden partition on the hard drive.
So which is really useful if that hard drive burns up.
Yeah, if the hard drive burns up, you're like, oops. You can't just go out and buy a hard drive and replace it. You have to basically go buy an operating system.
Can't they just issue you a holographic ticket for a digital download if that happens? That would seem to be the obvious answer.
It would be, in my opinion, the best solution. I tell people when they get a computer like this that doesn't have the disk, what they need to do is they need to find a friend who's a DIYer that more than likely has the right disk. Because the real copy protection is the serial number, not the disk.
Uh-huh.
And just get a copy of the disk. I mean, I know. I'm going to walk a borderline here for my anti-piracy view here on this. I'm not talking about pirating it. I'm not talking about giving it to people with a serial number. But give them a copy of the disk so they can keep it put away.
Getting
for
back
reason.
What you've already paid for.
Yeah, you've already paid for this. I agree with this company. I think that this is really chintzy of Microsoft. And let's face it, the only reason to do this is to increase profit margins.
Right.
There is no other reason to do this. Now, the argument's going to be, well, this stops piracy. No, it doesn't. I mean, that's like there is a – I got a piece here. I should have done it earlier when we had the SOPA box out. Speaking of piracy, there's a fun one too. I got a piece here. The Cato Institute did a study using the MPAA's own research to look at piracy. And, you know, when they actually looked at this and ran the numbers that the MPAA actually put together, SOPA will not, even if it's 100% effective, save a single job.
Gosh, imagine that.
It will not do anything worthwhile to help employment in the music industry. What it will do is increase the profits that the publishing houses make.
Right.
That's all it'll do. But I've told you how you can stop that, how we can fight back, how we can stand up. This is part of the SOPA Box campaign. And I'll give this real quick before we go to commercial break. Here's the steps. I mentioned this, by the way, in passing on the Rabbi Show. First, if you want music, don't even buy it. There are good, free, legal solutions to enjoy music. One of the best that Doug and I both make use of, Pandora.
Right.
Especially since it'll work on your phone. Why would you even need anything else? All right? I like blues. I turn in blues, and Pandora plays me all the blues. I get to hear music I'd never heard before, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got free legal music that you can get. What about TV shows or movies? We were just discussing this. You know, if you took a Hulu Plus account and you took a Netflix digital distribution account, you pay less than $20 a year, but pretty much all of your movie and TV needs are met. Now, you're not going to get to see new releases on release day. There are sacrifices we must make. So you're not going to get
$20 a month.
Don't go to the movie theater.
You said $20 a year.
$20 a month. Okay, $20 a month. Yeah, $20 a year. Man, I'm going to go buy that.
Yeah.
But for $20 a month, the movie and record industry is only getting pennies on the dollar for their productions. This hits them in the wallet, and they notice this. They'll listen to this. And it's a chance for you to make it clear to them, they need us. We don't need them.
Right.
Because let's face it, if we can't find anything to watch, we're okay. We have Skyrim. It's time the movie and record industry took an arrow in the knee.
Oh, Lord.
All right, I had to get one in. I had to get one in. Arrow in the knee. All right. You can email computeredradio at gmail.com. You can join us on Facebook and post comments there, facebook.com/computered. You can also check out the blog where you can get show back. I just nipped the archives, by the way, a little bit. I did some trimming. And we've got a new poll up as to which browser you use, computered.wordpress.com. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, what did I say I wanted to cover when we come back?
I don't know. It's not like I was listening.
How
or anything.
About this? It is time to pray.
Oh, geez.
To piracy.
Yeah, I know where you're
We'll
going.
Have all this and more. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Computer Ed Show. It is the Everyman's Technology Hour. We're trying to make it all make sense here for you on Monster Radio, AM 1150. What? You're giving me that look. Good grief. If you want to be part of the conversation, don't call yet because we don't have the phone lines open, but you can email us at computeredradio@gmail.com or make a post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/computered.
There you go.
And we're watching those. Ed's got him up over there. You'll be sure to distract him, and he'll stop talking in the middle of a sentence, and we'll all laugh. But we will respond to any reasonable requests.
Speaking of reasonable requests, you and I must take a religious pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And do you know where our pilgrimage will take us? It's not Mecca or Jerusalem.
Sweden?
No.
No Sweden?
To Pirates Bay.
Ah.
Because Sweden has formally recognized the missionary church of copy-me-ism. I am not kidding.
Yeah.
That is the name of the church. With 3,000 members, copy-me-ism holds that peer-to-peer file sharing and information are holy and sacred. I'm not joking.
Don't even get me started on this, because this is like alternate reality stupid.
Oh, it's worse than stupid.
They shouldn't call it copy machine. They should call it I'm a dickacy. There, I'm wadding my copy up too.
Whoa, look at the 3D.
I mean, this is just absolutely idiotic. Okay, they're going to legitimize piracy under the guise of religion. Now, you can't even put your tongue far enough in your cheek if you're drunk to act like this is real. But in Sweden,
and what's worse is the government's acknowledged it.
Oh, yeah. Well, what they had to do finally was that they had to come up with a standardized way of prayer and meditation, which I guess
Computeredism will be a religion next week.
If you want to, I mean, let's draw a not unreasonable parallel here, because we are talking about piracy. We're talking about theft. We're talking about stealing. This has nothing to do with freedom. It has nothing to do with expression. It has nothing to do with anything else. Let's just say we turn residential burglary into a religion. As long as we pray and meditate before each burglary, it's a religion, and therefore it's protected, and we can do it. It's the same.
Yep.
Tell me it's not.
It is. No, it's exactly the same. I mean, agree.
This is
it.
And then they wonder why whenever they do other stuff, we don't pay any attention. Folks in Sweden, I'm sorry. I love you. But when you do things like
especially
this, when your
females.
Government does things like this, and yes, I know, all governments
and
do idiotic
design.
Things, okay? People don't take you seriously after this. I'm done.
Well, that's all the story we're going to give it, because they won't take us seriously if we kept on it.
Right.
Speaking of seriously, though, let's get a serious story here. We had a listener send us the link for the story. There is a new virus that attacks your online bank account, and it's the SpyEye Trojan. Now, this is a...
Trojan man! Sorry, I just had to say that.
Yeah, I know, but...
They're not an official sponsor or anything.
This is, I hate to say it, Doug, this is one time I can't make a joke. This is serious. This thing's nasty.
Yeah.
What this thing does is this. It watches your online transactions to your bank, and it gets the information. And then it modifies the way your bank page is displayed in real time on your computer screen. So what will happen is this. It will get your credit card information. It will make a credit card transaction. When you go to the credit card site to get the information, it will intercept the page. Its algorithm is intelligent enough to find the transactions it made.
And redirect it.
Remove them. Reprint the page without them to your screen.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's impressive.
Does this infects and operates from your machine? Is that correct?
Yes.
Because I didn't.
This is only from your
one.
Machine. This is only from your machine.
I don't know how this one was
this,
not
this
in my stack.
This isn't getting into your bank stuff. They recommend that you also check with your bank or with ATMs to keep track. Because here's the problem: most banks don't start looking for fraudulent material until you report it.
Right.
Well, if they've got 30 days to be able to basically do what they want, that's a lot of headroom.
No more money, honey.
This comes back to, though, properly protecting your PC.
Right.
This comes back to keeping your PC safe.
Yes, there is no substitute for a good antivirus, and there is no excuse to not have a good antivirus.
Because they're free!
Since there are good antiviruses that are free.
Oh, my God. I hope she's listening to that. I won't say a name, and I won't say where she works or anything else. I talked to this woman the other day who normally I have a great deal of respect for. And I still have a great deal of respect for her, just not in this subject matter.
You just wouldn't let her work on your computer.
Never, never, never. She is the Mac head, the epitome of the Mac head. She's asking me about the new iPad. And I said I wouldn't bother. I'd get the Kindle or the Fire, but they're not an iPad. Well, yeah, I know, but they can do the same thing, but they're not an iPad. What do you think is different? Well, they don't integrate like with your phone and with your computer. Sure they do. Well, yeah, but they don't integrate like the iPad does. Well, no, not exactly like it. No. And I love my Apple computer. Really, why? Well, it's cheaper than a PC.
Oh, ouch.
And I'm like, what? And I wanted to say, what are you smoking and can I have some? Is what I wanted to say. And she starts explaining to me it's cheaper than a PC because with an Apple computer, you don't have to buy antivirus software.
Uh-huh.
At this point, she had pretty much left the reservation of all forms of sanity, and nothing I tried to explain seemed to be able to sink in.
Right.
And that's just sad that there are still Mac users out there that honestly believe that tripe.
Well, as I've said before, it's because they don't know anything about computers, and all that they get is what they hear over a latte
She told me, I've never seen a PC as fast as my Apple. I said, you haven't seen a PC that's been used right yet. Come over to the house.
Right. I mean, we could go on here, but I don't want to play pile on. We've covered this often enough.
But it's important. You got to have protection for your PC. But you know what? It's not just about protection for your PC. It's about protection for yourself as well when it comes to the internet. This is a fun story. Individual I know had a first date the other night. And the date went pretty well, and everything went pretty good. And when she got home, she decided it was prudent to look up the individual. Because he had given her some facts about his life, and she thought this was prudent to look up. Well, as she began looking up, she discovered some interesting information.
Wait, let me guess. He did, in fact, play football, but it was on the prison football team.
Sort of. The location he said he was from proved to be a complete and utter lie.
Ooh.
Based on the fact that his brother was from a different location and had graduated in school from a different location, so he wasn't where he said he was from.
Hmm.
She informed me a number of links she found to his name that had his picture, by the way, she knows it was him, were on adult websites looking for hookups.
Awesome.
So the key to this, though, is this, and this was a lesson that I stressed to her is important to learn. First, he may have changed from the person that posted all that stuff. He may be different now, okay? And I can't believe you're reading a magazine while I'm talking to you.
I can multitask. I've upgraded since last week.
When you post something on the internet, it's going to stay. And if you do something stupid, it's really going to stay. It's going to be one of the first things people find. But second, it proves that you've got to be able to check up on people. This is, by the way, a good thing, I think, about the internet. We don't talk about this too often. I think that one of the shows coming up, we need to do, for Valentine's Day weekend, the show before Valentine's Day, Doug, we're going to do internet dating. We're going to talk about internet dating.
Okay.
I have experience.
That's what I've heard. I was talking with someone just the other day about computer, and they said, you know, he's experienced. And I said, you know what? I'll take your word for that.
Okay. I'm completely lost now with what you were trying to
go ahead with your story. I'm sorry.
Say here. But anyway, the point is that this shows that you can make use of the internet in the dating arena in what my opinion is the positive way. You can make sure about the person you're getting together with. Because in this day and age, when we were dating, Doug, think of how many women we lied to. Exaggerated our financial state or you know what I mean? The typical lies a guy tells in a nightclub.
Keep digging the hole. I'm listening. It's your story. You tell it any way you want, brother.
But now we can't lie to the women anymore. They can check up on us. Man, you're going to leave me out there hanging.
You're the one with the experience, my friend.
Listen. Pinky B.
There we go. Now I know I've popped the soap bubble.
Pinky B.
When he starts calling names, I know I've made headway.
By the way, for all of you that listened last week that didn't vote for Doug to be called the Pink Biatch, I'd like to thank you for that. You left me hanging. But we had a lot of fun with it because Doug's mother-in-law listened to the show for the first time last week.
Yeah, I think she actually would be one of your voters, except that she didn't have a computer in front of her at the time. So well, you can count her as number five if you want. She's just happy to be related to a celebrity. Celebrity, something.
I was going to say, was she related to me?
You will be proud to know that I introduced myself the other day as the lesser half of the Computer Ed Show. See, I know my place in this world, but on the other hand, hey, I get to read a magazine during the show.
watch the deck cam, folk. During this, during the top of the hour news break, you'll watch me biatch slap Pinky B.
I'm closer to the door than you are.
You'll come back in sooner or later,
yeah,
and it won't
true.
Be ugly. Hey, where's my... you know what I need? I need that SteelSeries or ThermalTank keyboard.
What, you can beat me with it?
I'm going to see if it can survive.
Now that I'm afraid of.
We're going to do a durability test on keyboards.
That SteelSeries keyboard, you could beat me to death with that. And after you finished picking little chunks of flesh out between the keys, you could get on in game with it.
Speaking of that, I wonder if they posted it yet. SteelSeries, we got it, an honor. They liked our review of the headsets that we did. It's the Siberian headsets so much. They're posting it on their website.
Deservedly so. They are a nice set of headphones.
They are nice. So nice. Doug went out and bought two.
I bought two sets for Christmas gifts.
Hey, speaking of that, where's Sparky? Where's little Sparky? Our intern has ducked his responsibilities. Grab a mic, little Sparky.
And put on your radio voice. You know, he does radio.
Okay, little Sparky, hold on. He's got to give you the headset so you can hear me.
Give me that.
Okay, little Sparky, here's our question. That nice, nifty new headset you got for Christmas, that SteelSeries Siberia 2, tell us what you think.
I think it's the last headset I've ever worn. It has great mic quality to it.
Yeah, they are light. They feel like they disappear on your head, don't they? Have you gotten up from your desk yet and been yanked back by the cord?
Well, see, the way I have it is
that's
mic, my mic plugs into the back of my computer, and the headphone plugs into my speaker, so I had to adjust the wires, so the headphone cord yanks out easy, but not the mic one doesn't.
Okay.
It's weird, the way it's set up.
It fits you. That's what's important. Now, what color did you get?
Red.
Your brother got the pink then, right?
Yeah, naturally. It's his color.
No, seriously. What color did your brother get?
Blue.
Ooh, did he get the blue and white ones?
I think it's just blue.
Just blue and black.
Just blue and black.
Right.
All right. Of the two, which one do you think's sexier?
Mine.
Good answer. Good answer. So you like them, though?
Yeah.
Okay. See, and you can thank SteelSeries for that, Doug. They helped you with your Christmas shopping.
Yep. Yep. They did. I mean, once we finished the review, I knew that I was getting those for both of them. And my older son, who was using them the first day he plugged them up, while he was testing, was going over, and he had both his headphones and his speakers on. So I was able to hear the comment when he jumped into TeamSpeak channel, and he was asking everybody how he sound. And several of the people on there, whenever he had abandoned his other microphone for these, said that his voice sounded much more better.
Much more better.
I started to say much more grown up, but he probably wouldn't like that if he hears that. But no, they did all say that he sounded a lot better and a lot clearer.
Sounded more like a guy, did he?
Yeah.
All right, you can email computeredradio@gmail.com. We're coming up to the top of the hour. When we come back, we have a request by Evan Kim to describe the differences between a professional grade and a consumer grade video card. Well, we got AMD on the phone. They're going to tell us what the difference is. We're going to have that plus your emails. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Kings is back.
It goes one for the money, only two for the show. We told the roof off. Now it's time to blow. Like, we don't need a wallet, don't bother. We let it burn. Keep the fire just a little bit hotter. That way you'll learn. Respect the herd. Started with the click that I had. Respect the herd.
Welcome back. This is Computer Red on Monster Radio, AM 1150. And what we wanted to do is we cover in hardware a lot. We get involved in the high-end stuff, or we get involved in the technical stuff. And a lot of our listenership obviously isn't geared that way. So sometimes we need to stop, slow down, and bring them up to speed. Now, a subject that I've never heard really discussed, and I think would be a great discussion topic, is the difference between a professional-grade graphics card and a consumer-grade graphics card. So I have on the phone with us from AMD, Alexis Mather, who is the technologist for the professional graphics group, the Fire Pro group at AMD. Alexis, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
Let's begin with, most people, when they think about graphics cards, and in fairness, this is the huge majority, I believe, they think about computer gaming.
Because
built-in graphics, let's face it, built-in graphics has come a long way. AMD, by the way, is partially responsible for that. All right, so we've come a long way with built-in graphics. We can do most things. But when people think then about a graphics card, they think about a gaming video card. But there's another whole group of video cards out there. Could you tell us a bit about that group?
Sure. So professional graphics cards, including the ones from AMD in our AMD Fire Pro line of professional graphics cards, are really products that are destined towards what I call the sort of the group of users who rely on rich pixels to make their living. And by rich pixels, I mean pixels that require a fair bit of work to go into a fair bit of computational work to go into them to deliver them to allow people to do their jobs. And so that includes people like CAD designers, people who are designing products of all kinds, from the smallest the smallest little plastic toys, all the way up to buildings and cars, automobiles, and so on.
Essentially, talking about 3D rendering here.
Yes, so I mean, in those cases, those are users who are doing 3D rendering of their models. So they're building models of the products that they're intending to build either in factories or out on work sites. It also includes people who are, for example, doing production work. So people who are doing any kind of production from TV all the way through to movies, visual effects. Some of the most sort of obvious stuff, like you'd see in the summer blockbusters, so the special effects you see there. But even the sort of the more the less obvious, and certainly the more usual video editing. Color grading and so on, and those CAD users, the computer aided design users in the manufacturing and building space, and digital content creators are really the sort of the two key buckets of people. But professional graphics users also include people who are doing medical diagnosis or who are doing visual simulation for actual, you know, flight simulators, driving simulators. And so on. So there's a sort of a wide range, and again, it's people who use the way I like to put it, rich pixels in their everyday life to get their job done.
Well, now I'm confused then, because I was under the impression, and I think a lot of people are, one of the selling points we see for graphics cards outside of gaming in the consumer market is that they can help accelerate for people that are doing video editing or maybe even doing simple 3D renderings. Is this another level of support for those kind of things?
Right. So it absolutely is. In terms of professional graphics cards, they definitely offer a different level of support. And what we mean by support is sort of a split across a couple of different things. But in terms of actual support, it really comes in the form of the actual product itself. It's a product that in our case AMD builds directly, as opposed to being a product you might buy from a third party board builder. So it's a product that AMD builds and that we stand behind. So we provide a 3-year warranty. We provide priority technical support and so on for that product. We also tend to build the products for a much longer span of time, which is very important for companies that have a need to deploy lots and lots of graphics cards and want to be able to have them available to build out over time or to do replacements and so on. So another key part of that support is the fact that we do some very, very rigorous testing of our cards, of our drivers, with all of the popular applications that are out there, particularly in the spaces that I was mentioning in CAD and digital content creation. We very rigorously put through the drivers through this testing process that ensures that we have full support. We're bug free and high performance for these users to use day in, day out, and not have to worry about sort of glitches caused by someone missed this or that aspect of the quality or this or that aspect of the application's feature and so on.
Now, I want to make sure everybody understands what you're referring to by this. This is a very small group of programs, especially compared to the consumer market. So because you've got such a smaller group of programs that this has to be able to work with, you guys are able to do a much higher level of quality control when it comes to the driver and the functionality of the card within the software than a typical consumer card can do, correct?
Absolutely. And what we do is we strive for what we call the certification. So a lot of these applications, the people developing these applications, want to make sure that the hardware that people use, including particularly graphics cards, are going to deliver to their customers the best experience. And so they have typically certification programs where they will say, once we've put the card through its paces, the driver through its paces, they will stamp that and say it's certified. And that gives them the confidence, and particularly their customers the confidence, that they can go out and buy this professional graphics card, install this professional graphics card driver, and the things will be up and running and not have very, very expensive CAD engineers and so on sitting around with tech support trying to work on their machines and them not actually being productive. That's a really key part of the professional graphics offering.
Now, from a technology point of view, is there in the hardware a real difference between the way a professional graphics card is designed and the way a consumer-level card is designed?
Absolutely. So it really sort of covers all of the key aspects of what a graphics card is. So from the from the chip to the board to the driver, everything has differences. Now the differences aren't in all cases very extreme. We have a very substantial portion of our driver is the same as the consumer driver. Like I said, there's that extra bit of testing and performance tuning and so on for applications. At the board level, we will typically, like I said, we will build the boards ourselves. And so we'll build those boards with components that are carefully selected, with quantities of memory that are appropriate for the different users at different points in the market, the different segments. And even the chips, we'll make sure that those are well selected for the professional users, and in fact are the professional versions, if you like, of the chips that AMD makes.
Now, when we're talking about the chips, the actual GPU on these cards,
yeah,
is it essentially? Do you have two different chip research groups, one for the professional, one for the consumer market, or is it essentially one research group and different grades of that chip are used for these two markets?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter. Building a chip of any kind today, but particularly the leading edge high-end graphics products, is a very, very expensive business, and so we look to leverage the teams and the numerous smart people that we have and make sure that they are building products that have the best capabilities for both the consumer and the professional market. So definitely the sort of single teams. But there, as you said, there are different grades, if you like, different types of the different products, and we build and productize those professional versions.
Now, when we're looking at that, then this is a question I've had people ask me before.
Sure.
Is there any reason then, again, back to why most consumers would buy a video card? Let's say I do some 3D work at home. I do a lot of CAD work at home. I need that rendering capability, that ability to be certified to work within my software to make it work right. Could I still game on this card? Would I get that kind of experience that the consumer card can bring?
Absolutely. In terms of the performances and so on, and the capabilities of the professional graphics card, the way I like to put it is that it's basically everything a consumer card can do and more. And so we have the same level of support, for example, in Microsoft DirectX and OpenGL. We'll have the same level of support as the consumer cards do, and be able to render and run games just as well as the consumer cards. One of the things that I will say is that we don't necessarily pay a huge amount of attention to make sure that we've got all of the latest bug fixes for the latest games. As the games come out, we need to address sort of various questions in our drivers and so on. We don't always have those in our latest professional graphics drivers in the way that our consumer brethren do. But in all other regards, it's absolutely everything a consumer card can do and more.
Now, there's a price premium, though, to get these cards, isn't there?
There is. Now, the important thing to realize is that professional graphics cards aren't just at the ultra high end, though. So we actually have currently the AMD Fire Pro range has a complete offering of cards starting down that I was just checking earlier today on some e-tail sites. You can get one of our entry level graphics cards for basically $100, and they do go all the way up to for our ultra high end. You know, 4 gigabytes of memory with a huge GPU on it and all kinds of special features will run you up to about $2,800.
Now, I want people to understand, though, because you made a comment, and I want to make sure that the less tech-savvy understand the comment you made, that you've got a budget card for about $100. Now, what they need to understand, though, is from a consumer level, that $100 card and $100 consumer card are not even close to the same beast.
That's right. I mean, they will be very similar. They'll be using the levels of performance, for example, for games in terms of the products that you'd buy at those price points are going to be pretty similar. But again, a lot of the special attention goes into the certifications, making sure those applications run well, run fast. And are all ready to go, as it were.
Now you come back though. You're really raising this great point that I want to come back to, and let's see if we can get everybody to understand the why. Because to be honest, I'm a little confused. Wouldn't it make more sense from a company's point of view then, instead of making two different grades of cards, a consumer level and a professional level, since they're essentially from performance points of view very similar? Wouldn't it have made more sense just to make one discrete video card lineup and do the certifications within that one group?
Sure. That's a very good question. The one point I haven't sort of touched on too much is the question of the performance, particularly in the professional application. So one of the things and one of the areas that there are some very real differences between the consumer cards and the professional cards is the performance optimizations that go into the drivers for those professional applications. And so we basically do a lot of work both in at the level of the chip, the board, and the software to make sure not only does that software, that important software, run stably, but it also runs fast. So there are some real differences there. In terms of why not to do a single product line, the reality is that the kinds of things that the consumers and professionals care about have sometimes these sort of kind of conflicting interests, and that's really the basis of having two different groups and two different product lines. I'll give you one example, which is going back to what we were talking about before and games and so on. Today, if a driver, we have on the consumer side a monthly driver cadence. So every month, like clockwork, we put out a new driver. It offers new capabilities, and in particular, it's been QA, that it's been quality assured with the latest games available that have appeared in that month. And you know, games will appear month in, month out. New games, new engines, new capabilities. Sometimes, unfortunately, new bugs. And so we have these drivers that make sure that those games run well, run fast, run with good image quality. And that's the goal of having that monthly cadence of drivers for the consumer side. And in fact, sometimes when a really big title comes out and there's perhaps some issue, for example, with anti-aliasing or whatever, we'll actually even put out a hotfix within days of knowing about the issue. The hotfix will go out onto the web so that people can enjoy those games. On the professional side, the cadence of the applications being released is much slower. So typically on the order of once a year or once every 18 months, and the importance for the users is not so much, you know, supporting the latest and greatest, but supporting what they are using day in, day out, and making sure it's very, very stable. And so that's why we have a much slower driver cadence. We'll put out drivers maybe every 3 months, and those drivers been put seriously through their paces. And that's one of the key reasons for having different products. Other reasons include, certainly at the hardware level, you'll have professional users who have different demands in terms of the performance and the data sets, for example, that they're using, which is why you'll find typically a lot of memory, generally more memory, but and certainly at the top end of the range, a lot of high-end memory on the boards, which does make them more expensive. And so consumers may not be willing to pay for that additional cost of those boards, which their games aren't necessarily going to benefit from.
Well, and I think let's give them an example of that. A sure. good high-end video card, about $500.
Sure.
What's a good high-end professional card?
So we have, for example, we have the AMD Fire Pro V7900. That's what we call a high-end graphics card. And that has an MSRP of about $1,000. So you can probably find it on e-tail for, I'd hazard a guess, around $800. So you're looking at obviously, you know, there is a price difference, but that board is going to have 2 gigabytes of memory. It also supports some of our highly advanced functionality. So there are things that are tailored towards some very specialized markets. For example, the broadcast market and the visual simulation market, we have specialist products that do things like synchronizing and doing video input and output, which are things that the consumers wouldn't necessarily want to use, and certainly wouldn't want to pay for as a result of not using.
Yeah, you just made, by the way, though, every small business owner I know that deals with CAD or 3D rendering very happy, because now they can say, "Yeah, I'll get you your new video card," because you can't play video games in your downtime because it won't run as well. Because the driver support isn't going to be as up to date.
That's certainly true. It's not something that we seek. Unfortunately, the reality. Unfortunately for those people, the reality is that the majority of the games, particularly the older ones, will run perfectly well. But certainly, sometimes the latest and greatest are not the things that we're paying particular attention to.
Okay, so safe bet to say here then, these cards, if you're doing a lot of 3D rendering, if you're into heavy work in AutoCAD, if you're doing movie work, these are the cards you want to buy. For everybody else, the consumer level is probably what you need.
In broad strokes, that's true. And there are a number of other sort of smaller professional markets, like I mentioned, the medical market, who want to drive very high resolution medical displays, and people who are in the oil and gas exploration space, people in visual simulation. These folks all benefit from some of the special features and capabilities that we have in our boards and our software. So it's not just CAD and digital content creation, but those are certainly the two sort of largest markets we address with the professional cards.
All right. Well, Alexis, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. You've given us a lot of great information. I hope this clears up for everyone what the difference are between. I know it did for me. I've always wondered. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You know that, yeah, this is for professional people, but why can't I use it too? It is a question. You've pretty much cleared that up for us, I believe. So we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much. You're more than welcome.
All right. This has been Alexis Mather from AMD. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll have more Computer Ed in just a minute.
Not move. You are now standing at Galactic Center of the Technology World on the Computer Ed Radio Show. Email us at computeredradio@gmail.com or check us out on facebook.com/computered to be part of the discussion, which is about to move to cable management in the case.
Yeah, you know, when you're a DIYer, one of the discussions we hear all the time, by the way, if you didn't catch that interview, which some people in here didn't listen.
It's a magazine.
Well, I know you got whacked on the head, so it was,
I got Dame Bramage now.
You already had Dave Berman. Your stutter is stopped.
Can't lose what you didn't have, right?
That interview, it was so funny. I did that interview. I actually set that interview a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, Eben Kim sent me a note saying, I would love to have an interview about this, to talk about what the difference are between these. Eben, great minds think alike. There you go.
Eben's been a dedicated listener so long, he is now telepathically linked to the Computer Ed Brain Trust.
Okay, here's the problem, though. Eben likes me on a soapbox. And the reason, and not a soapa box all the time either, because Eben has made a post that will be hit on in the last hour, Eben, I promise, that is going to get me to start on another soapbox.
Oh, Lord.
Eben just likes to hear me rant. Okay. When you go look at DIYer forums, one of the things that always gets talked about in one form or another is cable management. Now, when you get inside a computer, when you open up the box, you look at it, coming out of, now it's mostly out of the power supply now, is this spider web of cables to power everything, to power the motherboard. You need two cables at least. You need your 24-pin and your 4 or 8-pin. Some also add a regular Molex connector as well, and some add an additional 4-pin or 8-pin, depending on what you had in the first place. You need at least in most cases, a 6, if not a dual 6 or a 6 and an 8-pin connector to attach to the video card.
Right.
You need, in some cases of, in hard drives, you need a serial ATA connector. Your optical drive will need a serial ATA connector or a Molex. Your fans will either connect by a 3-pin connector to the motherboard, 4-pin connector to the motherboard, or by Molex. You've got, let's see, what else? There's other stuff, liquid cooling and just...
Plus all the other accessory stuff for lights, fans, anything else that you add.
There's cables everywhere. And one of the really cool things that developed in the early ages of the DIY was the art form of cable management. And this got epitomized by a company that no longer exists. It was called Voodoo. Got bought out by HP. It's now a division of HP.
Is that what happened to them? I remember,
yes,
Voodoo.
It is. And Voodoo made cable management an art form by hiring an origami master to come in. And this was back when we had the flat cables for hard drives and floppies. And he developed a technique of folding the cables so that they could be tucked out of the way. No tape, no glue, no wire ties. He was able to use origami to do this. Now, since none of us are origami masters, case manufacturers thought they would help us out, and they realized, you know, we got this big space behind the motherboard tray. We're going to put these cutouts here. You can shove the cables back there and have your spaghetti rat's nest back there.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Which is where ours are at. But one of the reasons that is always given is that it increases airflow and helps the cooling of the PC. I wanted to know if that was true. So what we did was this. We've got an Antec 300 case, which has mediocre cable management to begin with. So, and I've got this built up using a Fusion chip. It's got a 6670 for a video card in it. It's got the dual front fans. It's got the rear fans, everything else. Now, I turned off the dual front fans. I just used the stock fans for this particular round of testing because I wanted to see how much cable would do this. So what I did was first I built it up with immaculate cable management. I had cables with twist ties and stick them and tape and everything else pulled and tucked and punched out of the way. And I mean, this had more tucks than a tummy tuck surgeon in Hollywood.
Hmm.
Okay? But it was clean. It was a very clean, no obstruction at all to airflow. I got the temperatures. Then I pulled all the cable out. And I let it quab in this rat's nest right behind the hard drive bay and filled up. And I ran the temperature testing again. What I found was a difference of only about 2 degrees centigrade. That's within a margin of error. 2 degrees centigrade is a non-existent difference. And I'm talking overall on average, 2 degrees centigrade for the video card, the motherboard, so on and so forth. 2 degrees centigrade is a fairly minimal margin of error. So I put back in the case fans and went back and tried it again. The temperature difference fell from 2 degrees to non-existent. I couldn't get an accurate measurement of enough difference to notice. So the result is, yeah, no. I'm not going to buy anymore that cable management is mostly done to improve cooling. That's not the case. Cable management is done because of side windows.
Yeah,
it's about being neat.
Yeah, the practical reasons to do it are it's aesthetically pleasing in this world of side windows. And if you have to get in that computer on even a semi-regular basis, you can get in it and work on it without, you know, somebody finding your body tangled up in the wires and your computer 3 days later starving.
It's also, in fairness, it's a mark of pride because it means you took pride in your work and took the time to do it. Now, I can see a potential problem if you don't have filtering because this would be a dust catcher. And it could build up. I could see that becoming a problem. But most decent cases today have dust filtering.
Right.
So that's less of an issue. Now, what does that mean to the DIYers out there? I'm not telling you don't practice good cable management, because you should. It's a matter of pride. It's a matter of professionalism. It's a mark of that you really cared about the PC you built. What I am saying is this. Where I have known people that have spent hours trying to get the perfect cable management down, unless you've got a side window or you intend to open that door all the time for people to see, spend that time playing Skyrim, not worried about how the cables look.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, they took the arrow to the knee. But that, your son's going to come over and shoot me with an arrow here before I'm done. That phrase has become, the Bethesda wanted to be known for something. It didn't want to be known for arrow to the knee. But what I found is that this is a neat thing to do, but don't believe that this is going to be some magic that's going to instantly help you lower the temperatures of your case. It's not going to do it. It's worth the time. It's worth the effort. It gives a very clean look and build. There's a sense of pride and accomplishment when you do it.
Just don't expect a 10-degree difference.
Don't expect any kind of radical difference in temperature by doing this. Our emails are open, computerredradio@gmail.com. You can also send in questions or comments through Facebook, as Eben did, facebook.com/computerred. Email, Chris Robbins just sent us an email. Apart from price, how can one tell if a PSU, or power supply unit, is crap? My PSU has next to no reviews, and ones that are there stay away, and that the max wattage is 550 and not 680 watts at peak, 650 all the time. And how can I tell if it is crap PSU is in my system by how it's acting? Okay. First, when it comes to a power supply unit, this is one of the few times I really strongly say, well, actually in the PCs, it's not a few times. It's actually more often than it's not. Name matters.
Right.
Who you buy from makes a huge difference. When it comes to power supplies, I buy Antec, great reputation, solid units. Thermaltake, great reputation, solid units. I'm buying OCZ now. Now, a lot of people are going to go, what? The reason I'm buying OCZ is OCZ bought PC Power and Cooling, who is one of the premier power supply manufacturers.
Who was the other name I was going to bring up.
Okay. So if you get an OCZ, you're actually getting a PC Power and Cooling power supply. There are a couple of other brands as well. Silverstone's up there. There are a couple of other brands. Corsair, who doesn't actually make their power supply, by the way. They rebrand one, but they got a great power supply that they're doing this with. So you got a few other options to choose from, but primarily those are the ones I'm going to stick with. I look for the 80-plus certifications. Now, that's not Hard OCP had a great article a while back that basically showed 80-plus doesn't necessarily mean high quality. But I still use that as a benchmark as well. One of the keys, though, is to getting a power supply with the wattage you need and not getting overkill. There are some great, and if you do a search for a PSU calculator, there's a bunch of them that's going to come up. The one from Extreme Tech is the standard. Use the free calculator. It'll do fine. You use this calculator. Now, what this calculator is going to do is it's going to give you the number that your computer is going to hit at full load. Couple of things to consider. First, no computer ever hits full load without specific stress testing. Does never happen. We talk about this all the time. We'll stress test CPUs. What are their temperatures at load? What are their temperatures at load? Well, their temperature at load under a stress test is never what you're going to see in reality. Okay, does it work that way? Well, okay.
If you're folding at 90% CPU usage,
okay. If you're gonna let your computer run at 500 watts of constant usage for days on end, maybe. In typical use, you're never going to see it hit load. But now here's the but: I always give myself extra headroom. So you run the calculator. Let's say the calculator comes up and it says that you need a 480 watt power supply. Most people would think, great, I'm going to get a 500-watt power supply and I'd be okay. No, I'd get a 6. If it says 500, I'd get a 6, 650, 700 minimum. And that's where I'd be at. You always want to go a couple of steps past to get that extra headroom because you don't know if you're going to upgrade. You don't know the quality of the component. I mean, just because it says it's going to do it doesn't mean it will.
Right.
You want a safety margin. But what I suggest, Chris, is this. You buy a name brand that you can trust. You buy also the models within the name brand. For example, Antec makes one called the Basic. I wouldn't buy a Basic. Now, their Earthwatt power supplies, which is a budget-oriented power supply, is a great power supply. But I wouldn't buy their basics. You don't want to buy the cheaper stuff. You want to buy the middle of the road. Because usually the middle of the road is where the real value is. The super expensive might look great and sound really cool. But for the price difference, you're not gaining nearly as much as you believe you are. It's that middle of the road. Now, if you have a power supply and you're concerned it's acting up, power supply errors are one of the hardest things to track down on the planet. And the reason for that is a power supply can cause errors that can be mimicked by a lot of other components. I've had power supplies that have tested perfect with an actual tester every time, perfect. But in the computer would cause all sorts of crashes and errors because under stressful load, they would begin to fail. So at the end, it's not as simple as saying, is there a way to tell if my power supply is the problem? If you're getting really strange errors, you're getting blue screens out of nowhere, you're getting crashes that don't make any sense, then it's possible that that's a power supply error. A great investment for any DIYer is to buy a good power supply testing unit. These can be had for as little as $15, $20. Or you can buy a nice one like I've got the Dr. Power 2 from Thermaltake, which has the nice LED. I'll have to bring it in and show it off. It's got the nice LED display showing me that everything's hitting where it's supposed to hit. That's a great device, too. That's $40. It depends on if you're going to be doing a lot of DIY. If you're doing any DIY, one of these is worth having. Doug needs one, by the way.
I do.
I got to get you one.
Santa Ed?
I'll have to get you one for your birthday. but use that. Test it. If all of that and you still come back and you're not sure, the only real way to find out then is to replace the power supply. I know we hate doing that because of plugging in and unplugging all those cables. Remember the cable management we just discussed? You got to redo all that. But that's the way it is. Chris, I hope I answered your question and didn't confuse you further. We need to take a – Chris says, by the way, he's looking at the Corsair HX650-watt. Buy it, dude. Check to see. Corsair's one of those great brands, and the HX is one of their better lines of this. Check to see if this is going to be enough wattage for your PC. Use a PSU calculator. But if it is, and in most cases with modern PCs, unless you're doing multiple video cards and 8 hard drives, it is. This is a great power supply to get. You're not going to go wrong with it. This is a great power supply. Okay, we're going to take our commercial break. When we come back, digital media distribution. We've already talked about free-to-play gaming, but are we about to see the end of boxed video games and boxed software? We'll talk about that. Plus, we're going to open the phone lines when we come back. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment.
Success.
Welcome back to the Computer Ed Radio Show on 1150 Monster Radio. The phone lines are now open. 618-993-8102 is the number to call if you'd like to be part of the show, or you can email us at computeredradio@gmail.com. We're coming up into a gaming segment, aren't we?
Yes, we got to touch a little bit on gaming. How can we possibly go through the show?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a complete show without gaming.
Well, we've done some gaming already. Interesting statistic. Steam, over the year of 2011, had for the seventh year in a row 100% sales growth.
Nice.
There are over 40 million registered people on Steam, and I'm two of those, by the way. And there's a long story there. There was a mistake. And that's the one thing I don't like about Steam. I wish they'd let me merge the accounts.
Uh-huh.
780 petabytes. That's, Dave, your computer can't hold that.
That's many, many bytes.
That's a many, many bytes.
Even existed.
That's a buttload of bytes. That's a big buttload of bytes. That's like, I like big butts and I cannot load of bytes. 780 petabytes of data have been distributed over the course of this year. 19 million items. That's a lot of items. Steam's data, This is amazing. And then you see that Steam, this is why Steam is so successful. They don't stop with just selling games. I'm on their website right now. They have great marketing material that if you're a game developer and you're not using this, we use this survey, by the way, to keep track of information. For example, right now there are 104,000 people out there playing Skyrim. I'm not one of them.
No, because we're here working.
I wanted to play Skyrim.
Well, you'll have a chance in about 10 days.
I'm not going to get to play Skyrim for like a week.
Yeah, I'm going to be running for 2 weeks to catch up.
Quad-core processors are now up to almost 50% of all Steam users. That's an interesting feature. A game developer needs to keep track of that. Video cards. This is really interesting. Do you know that none of the 600 series from AMD even show up until, way down the chart, like at 1.6%? Almost all of them are in the 500 series. So that's an interesting statistic that's got nothing to do with this. But the point of this is digital distribution is now here to stay. It's become such a big deal that EA felt that it wasn't proper for them to keep sharing their profits anymore with Steam and decided to start their own system.
Right.
So you've got that. You've also got, what's the one from Stardock? Impulse has a digital distribution system as well. So you've got three that I can think of off the top of my head already. Now, our mighty intern over here... By the way, before we get to this, let's do this first, and I'll come back to the other. You were mentioning, you walk into Walmart. Go ahead and tell the story the way you were telling it.
Well, I was going to buy Star Wars: The Old Republic, and...
Shame on you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm teasing, go ahead.
I'm addicted to it. But, so, instead of deciding to buy off Origins, me and my brother are going ahead to go to town, so I figure I'd go and stop in the Walmart. Now, how many games have we seen to where... On this is the day after Star Wars release. How many games have we seen where they're like completely sold out?
Oh yeah, that used to happen all the time.
And I walk into Walmart and I go in the gaming section, and there I only see like two copies of The Old Republic missing, and the rest is fully stocked. Now I've never seen that before.
So either they really shipped a lot of physical units, or what he's guessing is most people went with the digital download for Star Wars.
Well, and I believe that's a fair assessment. Digital downloads have reached the point that it makes no sense. Even with you and I, we have this subscription package we get from Microsoft for the radio show.
Right.
Where we get our Microsoft Office and our Windows, and we're always up to date. We've always got the current ones and everything else. They stopped shipping discs. We download the discs now and create our discs as we need to.
Right.
Digital download is seriously the future, I believe, of this software. Look at the fact now, and you and I have commented on this more than once. You walk in now to a GameStop or what used to be a Babbage's or an EB's.
You barely see any PC section. The
PC section is one little shelf. It's a little bitty shelf. You're giving him coaching tips, are you?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, he's not used to dealing with these kind of mics. You got to get down in these mics.
Are you scared of the microphone?
It's going to eat me. I know it.
You got to treat this mic like a girlfriend.
I got to lie to it and tell it its butt doesn't look big?
You want to get really close.
I got to lie to it. No, this wind cover doesn't make your butt look big. I'm going to get in so much trouble.
But the pee popper, now that's another story.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get in so much trouble. Lisa's listening to the show. I'm going to be dead when
I get
home.
She's not your girlfriend, though. It's your girlfriend you got to worry about making mad.
That's true. My wife, I make mad by waking up in the morning.
Right.
I breathe, therefore I'm in trouble.
It's like, oh, crap, I got to put the insurance policy back in the drawer. He woke up again today.
She's going to miss me this week, you know it.
Probably.
But I'll have use. I won't miss her. I had to dig the hole. I can't leave without a hole.
You said I was going to be with Dave all week.
You are.
Dave, you're going to have to fight for me.
No, you're on the street corner. Dave's not even going to keep you.
No, you told me you were going to lease me out to Dave.
Yes, and Dave and I have discussed it. He's going to
sublet me.
He's going to put you on the street corner, sublet you to strangers, and pocket the profits.
Do I even get a percentage?
Nobody get kissed goodnight.
I've got to have some incentive here. See, you already bought me a round trip ticket. Now, that would work better if you'd only bought me a one way ticket.
All right, I'll buy you dinner. Okay.
Okay. All right.
There we go.
More than I usually get.
You know what? There's a song that fits. You dig a hole so much. There's a song called "Diggy Diggy Hole." For those of you Minecraft fans, you should know what that is.
I Minecraft. Speaking of which, now that I'm gonna, because we've already left the train has left the trolley, the station, and the state. Your Minecraft server, since being announced as the official server, behold the power of Computer Ed Radio, has had phenomenal growth. And you guys are where now? You said almost it's a top-rated server in Minecraft?
Yeah, we are close to the top page on MinecraftServers.com.
Oh. Yep. Computer Ed fans, get on there. Now Come on, we need the top.
I'm told they've had an IP address change, so when I get that, we'll post it on the Facebook for those out there that may have gotten confused.
Yeah, if you think you've lost the server, we'll fix you and you can go back.
Yep.
We have to keep our official server stoked.
It cannot die.
We got to keep Blame busy, patching and fixing and cleaning up after people. He doesn't get any
play. He can't play.
He doesn't get any actual play time.
Actually, it's not him anymore. I'm not going to say exactly what, but he can only play on the weekend. So now all of that weight has been left to the second owner, who is now hosting the server.
Ah.
So, just out of curiosity, is the second owner old enough that mommy won't ground him?
Second owner is my age.
Really, when we get down to it, are we ever old enough that mommy won't ground us? I'm 48, and my mommy could still ground me.
Yeah, like you.
Just ask her. She'll tell you.
She'll sick the chickens on you.
All right, our phone lines are open, 618-993-8102. You can email computeredradio@gmail.com. You can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/computered. And we're getting all sorts of emails and stuff like that, and we're gonna save all this when we come back after the top of the hour, because we got enough stuff that we can keep this going for the top of the hour. But no, digital distribution is the way of the future. If you don't have a Steam account yet, my question is: if you're a gamer, how could you possibly not?
Yeah, it just makes too much sense.
Well, Steam has great sales. You don't have to go down to the video game store and deal with all the console dweebs.
I bought a game the other day because it was on like 60% off sale. I'm not even ready to play it yet, but when I get ready to, hey, I bought it for $17.
I believe that's Deus Ex.
Yep,
Deus Ex, which is considered one of the great games of 2011.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get these. You get great demos. You get all sorts of news. Steam is a happening place. Steam will be paying us for ad space after CES.
That'd be nice. They've gotten enough free.
Yeah, they ought to. What now?
I recommend if you don't have a Steam account, quit listening and go get it. Well, still listen and go get Steam account.
Go get it at the top of the hour while the news is on. The news is important. All the news we tell you. Do you know that according to a recent study, 1% of the people that use wireless internet account for 50% of the bandwidth usage?
I read that. That's disproportionate.
Sounds like the talk about how money is distributed in the country.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this apparently is also disproportionately placed in certain countries in Europe where I was reading in like Finland.
Well, because it's a religion.
Yeah, yeah, don't even get me started on that. You know, there's a lot of countries in Europe, the portable users are also tethering. So they're using this, as you said, a lot of them are using their computer as, yeah, I think you pointed this out on a previous episode of Computer Ed, they're using the computer as their portal for everything,
yeah,
watching TV and everything.
There's an article in PC Gamer, who usually I don't bother to quote anything, but this is a really good piece that talked about the use of discrete video cards.
Right.
And how in the U.S. we don't use them. But in Europe, there's this massive move. And the explanation the editorial gave, his opinion was that this was because in Europe they have much smaller homes. See, for us, a 1,000-square-foot home for us is a norm. In Europe, that's two houses.
Right.
So they've got these really small rooms. So if you want the big TV, there isn't room for the computer. So you've got to blend the two together to get the functionality.
Yeah. They were saying a lot of these are this 1% that uses half the bandwidth, they tether. And so they're downloading all of their movies or viewing all of streaming all their movies and content through their cell phone. And somewhere else in the article that I was reading, I found there was a mobile carrier in Finland that offers unlimited data for like $6.50 a month. Well, at those kind of rates, I guess so. Wish I could get a deal like that.
Have you ever watched Mr. Cheney in there?
No.
He is constantly this blur of hands and twisting in his seat and motion.
He does move around a lot.
And I'm wondering what he's doing in there. Is it Mr. Cheney? Is it like voodoo? Is it magic?
It could be.
Why is it so noisy in there? You turn on your mic and there's this background noise of like 5,000 fans and.
I have no idea what it is, but we're down to 1 minute in this hour.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. That's magic stuff going on in there.
I tell you, well, for 14 years, I had to run the board and all of that. And I'm watching him, and I'm thinking, man, I'm glad we didn't have a net cam, because right now they're bored watching me. I just kind of sit here. But then I'd have been like,
yep,
I'm going to keep it going now. Captain, she cannot take any more. Captain, I'm going to die.
Jamie was mimicking you. That was hilarious. You can't keep up with Cheney, Ed.
No, I can't keep up with Cheney. Nobody on earth can keep up with Cheney. Nobody in video games can keep up with Cheney. Okay, we got 20 seconds.
What can we do in 20 seconds?
How's that?
All right, remember, the phone lines are open, 618-993-8102. You can email questions and comments, computeredradio@gmail.com. We're going to the top of the hour. When we come back, phone lines, mailbag, and more. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment. What a quick!
Oh, that was close. That was so close. You're listening to the Computer Ed Show on Monster Radio, WGGH, 1150 AM, and my earbud just stayed in my ear. I'm going to have to call 911.
Holy crap!
Sorry, technical difficulties. That's what happens when you listen to live radio, folks. Wear a helmet. Phone lines are open if you want to talk to us, ask us a question, or offer your condolences. 618-993-8102. Or you can get a hold of us at ComputerEdRadio@gmail.com or splash something up on the Facebook page, facebook.com/ComputerEd. Speaking of which, have we heard from Dave today?
I want to get a Saints helmet with the headpiece in it, like, ooh, Drew Brees wears.
Cool.
I could plug it in. That would be cool.
Yeah, speaking of cool, though, you better put a couple of fans in it because it wouldn't be cool in here. You'd be sweating.
It'd be worth it. By the way, who dat when the Saints finish slapping the Lions down tonight? Well, I gotta be up at like 5 a.m. to get on a flight with you.
Yeah.
And the Saints play the late game. Okay, well, whose idea of humor was that?
I don't know. I didn't book the flight, man. I didn't book the flight.
Maybe they listened to the show and they did this just to torture you.
That could be. Hey, we had a question a while back. One of our listeners had made the comment that his New Year's resolution was he wanted to get a ComputerEd t-shirt. We wanted to let you all know that those are in the works.
Oh, yeah.
We have begun looking at design options, and Doug's working on bumper stickers.
Oh, yeah. Everybody needs bumper stickers.
Everybody.
Because bumper stickers aren't just for bumpers. It's like orange juice. It isn't just for breakfast anymore, you know.
Okay. Phone lines are open. 618-993-8102 if you want to save me. You can email ComputerEdRadio@gmail.com, or you can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/ComputerEd, to be able to give us live comments. Now, Chris Robbins, who had asked our PSU question, sent a follow-up. What he's got is he's currently got a 370-watt power supply. Chris, I'm presuming that's like an HP or something, right?
Yeah.
And he's about to upgrade to a Vision Tech 6850 for video. Congratulations and welcome to 3D gaming at its finest, Chris. He got his help, by the way, from Dave Rattray and the crew at overclockersclub.com.
Good deal.
Yeah, I like the guys over there, in case they didn't know that. We get to hang out with Dave this week.
Yeah, I think.
Then he'll never want to talk to us again.
Once he meets us in person, he will change his email address
Sunday
and everything.
Sunday night, me, you, Dave, and Ramson Coy. Vegas will never be the same. We're going to go to the comedy club at our hotel, and we're going to hope it's open mic night. And you three get to watch me embarrass myself.
I'm seriously worried. I'm going
to take video.
I'm going to take my dark glasses.
You're going to take video on your phone for YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Because our listeners will want to see that.
I'm taking video on my phone for blackmail.
No, that's for everybody else. But he's going to add a GT 430 for physics into this as well. And he wants to get the bigger power supply. That's why he's looking at the HX650. You know, if you're going to add the physics, I hate to tell you this, but I wouldn't get the 6850 then. You're going to have to use hacks to get that to work right. I would personally take the money you're going to spend on both of those and just get either a bigger single NVIDIA card, or I would get the 430 and then get a good NVIDIA video card, like a 560 or a 560 Ti.
Oh, now you tell him that. He already clicked buy on the shopping cart.
Don't! All right, let's see. Next, we got an email from Christina. I'm going to mispronounce this. Chow? Choi? C-H-O.
Can't see the screen, so go for
Cho,
it.
Chow, Choi, Chow, Chow. Christina has been a follower of my WordPress blog for a while. I'm sorry, Christina. Do you realize, I looked at the statistics.
Let's hope she's not an English major.
I looked at the statistics today. You're an evil, evil man.
Did she say you would be an interesting subject to study?
Actually, kind of. Anyway, I looked at the statistics today. Do you realize that this far into this year, we have taken more blog hits this year than we did the entire year of 2008? Well, okay. Well, that's an interesting
point.
We'll
talk about it in the next break.
Yeah, Christina, I'll say this if you're listening, because, well, Christina has an app idea, which, by the way, I want the app.
He loves the idea.
Okay, well, I can give the base concept without giving the particulars. Okay? What essentially she's wanting to do is she's wanting to create an app to help people live healthy. And she wants to do this through an RPG format. Now, that's as much information as I'm going to give. And the reason I'm going to give that, Christina, is I don't want somebody stealing your idea, because your idea is really cool. And I want this app. And look at me. I need this app.
Yeah, Ed is already in the diet realm as of New Year's.
I could use this app. We just lost network cabling on this machine in here. So we lost the webcam for me to show the belly.
Bummer.
That's not
maybe
cool.
You just overloaded the webcam.
I'm looking, Mr. Cheney, did we lose our live feed too? No, this just says the network cable is coming plugged, so we may be okay. But, Christina, this is a great idea, and I really, really want to see this. So,
we still have audio feed, it looks like.
Oh, Chris said that's not what his power supply is. That's what he pulls.
Oh.
Oh, well, then, shucks, yeah. A 650-watt power supply is fine. Mr. Cheney, when we go to break here in a few minutes, we've lost networking in here. The internet is down on this machine, so I'll let you look at it. I don't even have to fix the computer problems during the show anymore. I feel so big time.
It's a luxury.
I feel so big time. Let's see here. So anyway, this is a neat app idea, Christine. And definitely keep us in the loop on this, because we are really, really interested. Phone line is open, 618-993-8102, or you can email computeredradio@gmail.com. You can also join us on facebook.com/computered to be able to, well, you could, and the email could, if I could get them. I don't have internet. By the way, just to let people know, we posted this on Facebook earlier this week. Komodo Antivirus, their Internet Security Pro 2012. $4.99.
Is that still going on?
It's still going on.
Wow. I thought that was a one-day special.
For a year. It's a $500 virus-free guarantee.
Yeah.
Okay. I used this, the free version. I would have bought this.
Yeah. That you can't beat that.
It's a great idea, and it's absolutely worth taking a look at. I tell you what, because I just lost all this because I hit refresh without thinking, we're going to take a quick commercial break, re-plug in the network to see if we can restore network connectivity.
Should I go out and grab one of the chickens in the backyard?
Yes, make the sacrifice.
Awesome.
All right. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome back to Computer Ed Radio on 1150 AM WGGH Monster Radio.
Monster Radio.
If you'd like to be part of the program, 618-993-8102 is the number you need to call. Our webcam is back up now, and we have tied Ed's feet together so that he cannot knock the cable out anymore.
Can I just say something? You two sounded like Cookie Monster there.
Cookie!
It's not Cookie anymore.
That's right. They changed him to Veggie Monster.
Yeah, they've changed him to Veggie Monster now because cookies aren't healthy.
That is just evil.
I agree.
There is only one thing that's eviler: the people that tried to change the taste of Coke.
I suppose they could have changed him to Tofu Monster. That would have been even worse.
I would have killed myself.
It's more evil than the Evil Empire.
Yes, it's bad. It's bad, bad, bad stuff.
Bad mojo.
Our phone lines are open, 618-993-8102, or you can email computeredradio@gmail.com. I'm going to get spoiled with the celebrity treatment. I mean, we've got an intern that puts away our trash and gets us drinks when we're, and then we got an engineer who does all my work. And
someday maybe I'll even show you respect online. Who knows?
Don't keep your hope.
Possibilities are limitless.
You know, you can be fired.
What am I losing? I don't get paid anyways.
You can be replaced.
Oh, yeah. Who you can replace me with?
Hey, there's a whole line of plebes outside that door. Homeless plebes that just want to come in here and have shelter and food.
I'm sure with Coco which, would like the job.
Which, isn't your new nickname the Pink Plebe?
That's right.
AT&T him, brother. He reach out and touch him. He's your son. It's
I can't
legal for
wound
you to
him.
Hit him.
I need him to do stuff at home while I'm gone to Vegas.
Oh.
I just won't bring him a shirt back.
Oh, you know who we haven't heard from?
Dave.
The mighty Dave.
Yeah.
I guess Dave's getting to sleep now because he's not going to get any in Vegas.
Party like a rock star, and that's what happens.
And remember, Dave, what happens in Vegas will be aired on Computer Ed Radio.
He's probably out cruising around in OCC 1 today.
A private Learjet.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have a petabyte of storage.
That's right.
Okay, Eb and Kim, one of our faithful from the Overclockers Club group, has sent us a message designed to create a soapbox. What are your thoughts on computer insurance, warranties, and morality? Now, the example he gives, and this is an example that I have heard and seen in action more than once, is that you're able to get a warranty from a manufacturer, an extended warranty with an automatic replacement policy. You keep the product until right to the end of the warranty, then you cause the product to fail, and you go in and warranty the product, mm-hmm. usually getting a newer product in return.
Right.
That's theft.
It is.
It's theft. It's plain and simple. Yeah. It's stealing.
And when you have a friend that does that, you should smack them upside the head rather than chuckle at their cleverness, because it's people like that that cause all of our rates to go up for that type of insurance.
And remember that this person is someone you might have been trusting by themselves in your home. If they're going to steal from them, they'll eventually steal from somebody else.
Right.
As Weird Al said in his song, pirating music can eventually lead to cocaine use and other terrible, awful things.
It's been proven.
Evan, seriously, it's theft. It's plain and simple. It's theft. And his excuse is exactly that. His excuse is, well, the insurance warranty plan was pretty expensive, and there'd be no reason to have the plan except to do that because of the price of the products involved in the first place. Horse crap.
Yeah.
The purpose of a replacement policy, they are expensive, by the way. The purpose of a replacement policy is when you buy a device that's going to be used in such a manner that it's probably going to get broke. And if it does get broke, you're not suffering downtime as long. And for less than half the price, you probably have got a new device.
Right.
It's not for you to get a free upgrade at the end of the warranty period because you're a scammy, scummy little thief.
Right.
I'm going to get started. I'm going to get on
now,
a box.
Now, what I would like to see, and I think we have, correct me if I'm wrong, we've seen this on some technology products in the past where you could buy an upgrade policy, and at the end of X number of years, if that machine was still in good working shape, you were guaranteed X amount of trade-in value on the newer model.
Okay, first, the X amount of trade-in value thing has just about all vanished, and the trade-ins that those policies do offer now are a flippin' mm-hmm. joke. You get pennies on the dollar. You don't even get close to a fair trade-in value for doing it.
Right.
So those policies
but
are
But in principle,
a
it's a good idea. And I would like to see people offer that.
Extended warranties in general are a joke with exceptions. Okay, mm-hmm. In fact, it's because of behavior like this that those kind of policies, those instant replacement policies, have all but disappeared from the industry.
They ruined it for everyone else.
I used to get these things all the time. Now, for me, what I would get these on, the one product that I would buy these on were my computer joysticks. I mean, this was back in the days when I was playing Mech Warrior all the time, man. I was beating the crap out of a joystick. And I would buy that extended replacement warranty. Yeah, you know what? I bought a $50 joystick and paid $25 for a warranty. Big deal. But in 6 months, when my joystick died,
right,
I got another joystick, and I still got that a full year out of my joystick.
And we've talked about this extended warranty stuff before. That is one of the few items that I have recommended people go ahead and spend that money on, because game controllers in general and joysticks, they take a beating. And it is not uncommon at all to see them fail in less than a year. So that's one of those deals where, unless they're going to charge you, you know, the same product price, double the product price for it, if you're a solid gamer, if you're a 20-hour a week gamer, it's probably money well spent, because odds are you're going to use that warranty at some point.
All right, our phone lines are open, 618-993-8102, or you can email computeredradio@gmail.com, or you can do like Eben and post on Facebook, facebook.com/computered. If you missed part of this show or some of previous show and want to hear more, head over to computered.wordpress.com for our show archives. We have pruned them. Hold on a second, and I'll tell you how far back I've pruned them, because I forgot how far back I pruned. What was that?
That was unnecessary microphone noise.
Unnecessary, huh?
Yes.
Imagine him doing something like that. By the way, our new poll is up. What is your browser of choice? Let's see what the results are right now.
See, that's the irony about these microphones, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's ironic that my nose has to touch the mic for me to be clearly audible and not sound like I'm talking from down the hallway, yet they pick up the sound of a soda cap being screwed on from 3 feet away.
It's evil.
Chrome has a dramatic lead right now on our listenership. The show archives, we're going back as far as July, and now they are going back only to September.
Right. Now, those shows you've pruned aren't lost and gone forever, right?
No, if you contact me, and I mentioned this, if you need a show that isn't up there anymore, contact me. We'll look through the archives. If we've got it, we're not destroying these shows.
Right.
If we've got them, we'll send it to you.
Right. They are archived, because I don't know, who knows, someday maybe you'll be able to buy the Computer Ed box set.
I don't know why you'd want to.
Well, you can buy the South Park box set. You can buy the Beavis and Butthead box set.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, we're more valuable than those.
Beavis and Butthead is a worthy investment, though, in all honesty.
Yeah, it is. I love Beavis and Butthead.
What?
I'm sorry.
Now, come on. If it was Venture Brothers, I could accept that. But Beavis and Butthead?
You watch 10 episodes of Beavis and Butthead and tell us.
Think we
tell me
like
that
Beavis
that wasn't us when we were 12 years old.
That's us today. From the folks over at OverclockersClub.com, a new member over there. Well, actually, not that new of a member. They joined in 09. Nice Shoes has posted a comment about trying to make a decision on what to do with their SSD. They've got two SSDs. They were considering RAID 0, and they're wondering if they should do this. I see this discussion all the time. Let's clear up some misconceptions with SSDs and RAIDs, and for that matter, in RAIDs in general. The problem that exists when looking at hard drives with speed and performance is that this industry, the internet community in general, when it comes to computing hardware, tends to look at hard drives and look at the actual data transfer rates. Now, these are important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're not important. But data transfer rates only really ever come into play when you're dealing with large amounts of flat data files, such as if you're doing video editing. Okay, it's got to be a big file to really appreciate the data transfer rates. Day-to-day computer use never loads full files. It loads segments of files. It loads DLLs and moves them around all the time. The result is, it is not data transfer rate that will determine how quick a PC is. It's seek time.
Right.
The faster it can find the data, the faster it can move it. Because it's moving so little, even slow spindle drives, data transfer rates very seldom become saturated. So you want that seek time to get the real performance in day-to-day use. This is why SSDs are so flippant impressive, because the seek time goes from being measured in 8, 10 milliseconds to 0.1, 0.2 milliseconds. Now think about that. That's not only 10 times faster, that's 100 times faster when it comes to the seek times.
Or 100 times less slow.
Right. And when you... You're so weird. And I hate you. And that's going to be our other catchphrase. Arrow to the knee. I'm going to bring a bow in just to shoot at you. Anyway.
You're pressing the button. I hate that saying. It's so overused.
That's why it's fun.
It can't be overused. It's less than a month old. It can be overused in, say, 6 months.
That's how much people are using it. It's already out of date.
It is. Of all the things that they thought would come out of their game, arrow to the knee could not. I hope they're there. Because we've got the digital recorder we're taking with us to CES. I hope the folk from Bethesda at CES will give us 10 minutes.
We should take some foam bows and arrows with us.
Ooh.
Somehow I get the feeling, though, that in this day and age, we would end up getting arrested for having Nerf bows and arrows.
For all the plane, yeah.
Probably so.
You made me lose my... trolley.
Seek times, SSDs.
Seek time. Okay. So the key to an SSD speed is in the seek time. Now, again, people are going to say, well, it's in milliseconds. That's great. It really is fast. Too fast for you to notice until you realize hundreds of little accesses are taking place all the time. That difference in seek time suddenly becomes huge, and that's why the performance increase. Raids do not improve seek time. What a RAID does is it allows the data to be written and read from two different paths at the same time. Imagine a two-lane highway, well, a single-lane road moving to a two-lane road where you can go one way, though, each time. You can move twice the traffic down the road. But that doesn't mean that in the case of seek times, they're twice the improvement. It just means twice the traffic, hence twice the bandwidth. So in benchmarks, wow, look at this speed increase. In real-life usage, yawn, where's my speed increase for the money I spent? In the case of an SSD, a move in real-world usage, a move to a RAID 0 will not give any kind of meaningful increase to performance.
Yes.
Okay, Evan, you know what? I can accept that. I see what he's saying there. Evan just made a comment that he's right. A RAID 1, now a RAID 1, though, isn't typically, Evan, in fairness, associated with speed, which is kind of weird because it does help. It actually increases read transfer rates. A RAID 1 does provide a decrease in seek times. It's not as big, but it does provide a decrease. The reason why is a RAID 1, the two drives are technically identical.
Right.
So it can try to look for both, and with a good piece of hardware and software, it'll look for both separately at the same time so it can find the data in two different locations to improve the seek time. Evan's right, but in this case, we're talking about RAID zeros. So the result is you get that SSD, and you see these big, heavy enthusiasts who are people that have had computers for 3 weeks. And because they read a forum, they know what they're talking about now, according to their neighbors. I fix a lot of the computers these people work on, by the way. And when you see this, they think that they're going to get this huge performance increase by taking their SSD and moving it to RAID 0. What they get is a placebo effect. You put it on, you're like, wow, it's fast. Wow, it's amazing. Wow, it's incredible. Use it for 6 months, take it off, and then use it for 6 months again. You'll never tell the difference. It doesn't exist because a RAID only helps really the bandwidth of transfer, and if it's not a large scale file, it's not going to help. Now, Evan has pointed out a RAID 1 is a different beast. A RAID 1 is not two hard drives working in tandem like that. A RAID 1 are two hard drives that constantly keep copying each other. Now, this is for redundancy, not for backup. People make that mistake all the time. This is if one piece of hardware fails, the system can continue to function. It's kind of like the space shuttle. It's got two different oxygen systems. It's not for, well, in case we lose one oxygen system, we still have one because we don't want to lose the oxygen. No, it's in case we lose one oxygen system, we don't die.
Right.
Okay, there's a difference there. And so a RAID 1 can cause a slight decrease in the seek times. But again, it's going to depend on a lot of different factors, and it's not going to be significant enough to be a worthwhile reason to do it. Now, RAID 0 also introduces another factor that nobody seems to spend time talking about, increases the risk of drive failure. Now, it's not increasing the risk of drive failure because you have two drives. What it's doing is it splits the data across both drives, which means where before you were just worried about if one drive failed, now you have to worry about if a second drive fails, because if either drive fails, everything is lost. So you increase the percentage chance of a drive failure causing a catastrophic failure. It's not a significant increase, but it's there. So you're basically, you're spending more money, not getting a real performance boost that's useful in the real world, and risking your data more. A RAID 0 is a no-brainer of no use for anybody in general computer use.
So then let me ask you this. What would be the most practical way to deploy two SSDs?
I think the way I do it's pretty good. I just use them as two different drives, and I tell installs to go to two different locations. The only reason I can imagine to use two SSDs in a RAID 0 is the ability that the RAID 0 basically combines the drive and creates, as far as the computer's concerned, a single drive to look at. That's lazy, though. That's not a matter of it being better. That's lazy. You can make your software install wherever you want. You can move your data wherever you want. For example, I have two SSDs in my computer. I have a 120 gig HyperX Kingston, and then I've got a 64 gig Kingston, the V series. The 64 gig is a second drive, and I have installed Steam there, and all my Steam games go there. And then my 120 gig does everything else. It took me about 3 seconds during the setup to make it do that. And once it was done, it was done. You could move your data to the second drive. You can move your music and your video, if you've got a lot of those, to the second drive.
Right.
If you're going to use the second SSD, that's the way to use it. In this person's case, though, they weren't even looking at that. They were wondering if they shouldn't put it in another machine.
Right.
Well, if it's a difference between a RAID 0 and another machine, put it in another machine.
If you don't have to have that extra storage, moving that extra SSD to another machine will speed that machine up.
Evan also pointed out another flaw with RAID 0 and SSDs. Good point. I was trying to mention SSDs in general, not SSDs only, but Evan, this is a good point. Trim support, which is the equivalent of a defrag for an SSD. It's a very different approach, and you've got to let it do it. You don't use regular defrags for longevity. Trim functionality doesn't work in RAIDs. Now, Intel is trying to fix it with their next version, and it works sort of using that method with Intel's SSDs, but it's not working with all of them. And from what I've read, even the early testing of this, the software's quirky. So you lose that ability of the drive to keep its data speeds up because it can't clean up the garbage after itself. That's essentially what the trim does. It cleans up the garbage and allows the drive to keep its performance up. But that's a good point. When you move to a RAID on an SSD, you risk losing some of the basic functionality of the background capabilities of the SSD. They disappear as well.
So what happens if I defrag my SSD?
Well, what happens is an SSD can only write to each individual memory location so many times in its lifetime. And if you defrag a drive, what you're essentially doing is erasing, writing, erasing, writing, erasing, writing. You can, in theory, reduce the life of your SSD. You'd have to defrag a lot.
So it's not going to physically harm it.
It's not going to physically, well, yes, it does technically physically harm it. But one of the first things Windows 7 does is turn off the defrag utility. An SSD doesn't need the defragmentation as much. One of the reasons defragmentation slows down is because the files got so spread out, that seek time increased.
Yeah, in a traditional hard drive.
You're near instantaneous in an SSD, even if you've got fragmentation. It's not slowing you down. Not enough to ever be appreciable.
Right.
So it's not that big of a deal. But that's why it's turned off by default in SSDs under Windows 7. And under Windows Vista, they tell you, go in and turn it off. Okay, our phone lines are open, 618-993-8102. You can email computeredradio. Hold on, we've got another email here. Never mind. I already got that one. You can also email computeredradio@gmail.com, or you can join us on Facebook, facebook.com/computered. Be sure to like the page when we hit 500. Autographed copy of Star Trek Online.
Yeah, there ought to be enough Trekkies out there in the listening audience to spike that over 500.
Oh, there should be. I can't imagine we've
hit
all the Trekkies
short.
Yet. We're getting close.
Call your Trekkie friends.
Well, call your friends anyway. Tell them to tune in the show live. I mean, you can listen. You can listen by tuning in to WGGH if you're in the Southern Illinois area, or for that matter, middle of Illinois or Western Kentucky or Western Tennessee and some portions of Western Indiana and Eastern Missouri.
Right.
Okay, so you've got a big listening area. You can listen online at WGGH.net. You can listen on your phone with a Ustream app.
Right.
To be able to enjoy it. There's no reason not to listen live. And live has an extra advantage. You can interact with us. You can't do this anyplace else. You can't give us a question in real time and get an answer on any other place that does tech that I know of, with the exception of shows like Kim Commando and stuff. But I dare you to take on Kim Commando with overclocking. I'll take her on in an argument. I'll take her. I show her who's boss.
For the record, I try to keep all my Minecraft friends listening, but they always forget.
Because they have not figured out the priorities yet. They're children.
Right.
True.
They'll figure it out.
All right, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, Doug is going to pull through the stack of amazing news stories he has that is always on file and ready. I'm Computer Ed. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Order all of my sandwiches with mayonnaise. I'm a weird minesweeper. I can play for days. Once you see my sweet moves, you're going to stay amazed. My finger moves old fast, I set the place ablaze. There's no killer rap I haven't run. At Pascal, well, I'm number one. Do vector calculus just for fun. I ain't got a gap, but I got a soldering gun. Happy Days is my favorite theme song. I can sure kick your butt in a game of ping pong. I'll ace any trivia quiz you bring. I'm fluent in JavaScript as well as Klingon. R-I-C-C. You see me roll on my Segway. I know in my heart they think I'm white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Can't you see I'm white and nerdy? Look at me, I'm white and nerdy. I like to roll with the gangsters. Although it's apparent I'm too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Am I too white and nerdy?
You are too white and nerdy by far, my friend.
What was that, Hebrew or something you were speaking?
That was Klingon. My Klingon name from my Starfleet command days is Mokmich.
It sounds like you are having trouble.
Which is Klingon for dark omen.
Sounds like you're having trouble with vocal cords.
You will if you speak that very long.
No doubt.
I'll just take your word for it.
Yeah, same. I'm not going to spend time learning.
This
Klingon.
Is the Computer Ed Radio Show on WGGH 1150 AM. If you're here, you don't need to be anyplace else.
There you go.
I am going to share this story with you just because I've had it in my stack of stuff so long. It still has Coke Zero stains on it from the episode with the frozen Coke, and that was a while back.
Don't let Chaney hear that.
There is an app for your phone, for your Android phone now, that apparently was so popular on the iTunes store that it just had to make it to Android.
Does it track poo?
This one's almost as good, possibly better.
Oh, wow.
It is called the I Just Made Love app. The I Just Made Of app lets you tell the world where and when the deed happened. And thousands already have. That's the headline of the story.
Well, you know, if I had this app, then I'd use up my data bandwidth limitations with Alltel, and they've got unlimited.
Don't make me call in witnesses.
Lisa, get on the phone, Lisa. Call the show, Lisa. Defend your man.
And apparently this lets you log and GPS tag your private life. And as of the time that I downloaded this, which was back in December, over 10,000 people already had gotten it off of the Android app. I'm happy for all of you folks that you want to share with the rest of your the world what you supposedly did. You see, and that's the problem because it says the overwhelming majority of posts so far seem to be from men. And many simply seem to be jokes. And ironically, the majority, it says here, seem to be from Poland. Apparently, this is really popular amongst some folks who have gotten a hold of it in Poland and are having a lot of fun with it. But
they like Computer Ed there, too.
I like the last sentence here. It says, the I Just Made Love app lets one brag without fear that someone who knows better will be pointing out that one apparently managed it without company. my comments along this.
Now, wait, this. You know what this is? Do you remember, and I don't know if you got told to do this when you got married. When I first got married, I got told to do this.
Is this the whole penny in the jar thing?
The penny in the jar.
Oh,
every
God.
Time you make love to your wife, you're supposed to put a penny in the jar. The second year, you take a penny out.
Yeah.
This is the digital age version of this, but you get to share it instead of bringing out the jar to friends and going, look at my money jar.
Most of us recognized back then that this was. You know what? Mythbusters should do an episode on that. I really want you to suggest that they do an episode on that.
You know, they'd probably both be happy to.
So anyway, let's step back into rational thought.
Hey,
now.
I wonder if that could break out into a community.
It could. It very well could.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to point out, it's only bragging if the event actually happened. Otherwise,
it's lying.
Otherwise there was no actual event to brag about. And that's called fiction, or more commonly, lying. So this is the smartphone equivalent of back in high school when the boy's saying, oh, yeah, I got lucky this summer. Oh, yeah? Who was she? Well, you wouldn't know her. She wasn't from around here. Only now you need a smartphone to do it.
It's harder to track.
Yeah, I don't know. Guys never change, I guess. I do have a useful piece of information. If you know anybody that got a camera for Christmas, a digital camera or digital SLI, whatever, or has one. If you're familiar, you're already familiar with Gadget Track. They make a lot of different applications for tracking and recovering lost laptops and things
yes.
like that. They have got a neat little gadget called Camera Trace that, like $10 to register your camera. You register the serial number, and if your camera ever gets stolen, this program scans millions and millions of photos on the internet to look at that ID tag that digital cameras upload when they take a picture. One of those pieces of ID is the serial number of the camera
right.
that took it. This app will help you. You call and report your camera stolen, and it will go through these photos, and if it finds any photos that have been uploaded, for example, to Flickr, and by the way, they have every Flickr photo dating back to 2006.
Wow.
They will help you locate the GPS coordinates and login information of anybody who has posted pictures with your stolen camera. And apparently there are some pretty good success stories out there. So you know somebody that's got a $1,000 camera for $10, this is a pretty good investment.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
See, I offer real advice, too, not the just I made it with my hand app.
The trolley's way off the tracks.
Oh, my God.
The trolley can't find the Trexville trying to find
it. I need a moment.
Let's suppose that.
I need that app real quick. I need a moment.
Let's suppose that we uploaded a video to the interweb insinuating that the government was arresting people or harassing people. And that video went viral and caused a panic that the government was arresting people. What do you think the best way to deal with that would be?
To arrest the jerk that started it.
Yeah, well, apparently in China, that's exactly what they did.
Good for them.
The government showed up and said,
now, wait, first.
How dare you accuse us of arresting people? You're under arrest.
But now, wait. Did he falsify the information that caused the riot?
They posted a video apparently showing an army convoy pursuing a wedding party or something like this. The article doesn't go into a whole lot of...
In other words, he faked information.
No. The video was there, okay? And then there was some concerns about this video and what it meant. The government basically stepped in and said, you're creating a panic. We don't do that. And to prove it, we're going to arrest you. And so that's...
Okay, you know what? Then not good for them.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was a guy crying wolf and making up a story just to cause a panic, then no, he should be arrested.
Well, the only, according to the article that I read, the version that I read about this, the only evidence to the contrary is the government saying, no, that didn't happen. So
well, it's China. I don't know if I buy that.
Right, and that's exactly it.
I don't know if I buy it. Our government said, no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. You had the virus story, the banking virus story.
Yes.
There's been a malicious worm attacking Facebook accounts,
yes,
stole 45,000 login profiles.
If you've got a Facebook account, go. It's a great time to change your password. I did.
Yeah, apparently they used a piece of software that's been out there for a while called Ramnet.
Real quick, yep. JVR Francisco would like to know what the name was again of that app you mentioned for the phone. Where can they find, or the camera, where can they find that?
Oh.
And Doug will post this on Facebook this afternoon.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's called the, grab me one of those pieces of paper you just threw away because I wrote it. It's called the I just made it app or something. I don't know.
No, the app for the camera.
Camera. Oh, okay. That is
camera service.
Here we go. It is from Gadget Track, and it's called Camera Trace.
Okay, so you go to gadgettrack.com?
Yep. Gadget Track, GadgetTrack.
I'm checking it right now.
Yep.
We're going to post this on Facebook. Doug will take care of this.
And it says it's a one-time $10 fee to register your camera. And then
yeah, and if you've got a nice camera, I mean, like my daughter Nicole studying photography, and this is a great thing.
Professional photographers travel with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of cameras and accessories.
Well, now, hold on. I'm not seeing this. What's it called again?
Just do a search for Camera Trace. I know that it should be easy to find because whenever I was reading this story.
It's not listed on their site.
It should be because I looked it up whenever I was researching this story.
I just went to Gadget Track and it's not listed on their site. CameraTrace.com.
Okay, well, maybe they've got it on an independent website, but it is from Gadget Track.
It's by Gadget Track. Right. It's called CameraTrace.com.
Okay.
It's $10 per camera, and it includes a lost and found tag.
Right. Yeah, if you get the premium, it also has a physical tag on the camera. I mean, that's handy if it's lost, but if it's stolen, obviously the tag doesn't
be much
good.
CameraTrace.com, and we'll post that on the Facebook account this afternoon sometime. Thanks for the comment, though. That's great. And he got the information he needed.
Yep, that's cool to anybody who's got a camera that's worth anything. You know, I saw that cameras, mediocre middle stream cameras, really are getting the squeeze. They're seeing a big drop in your average pocket camera because everybody's just using their smartphones.
Right.
Now, SLR cameras are jumping in sales, like 17% to 19% increase in sales there. But your handy dandy little 10-megapixel dedicated camera,
they're disappearing because your cell phone carries your camera anymore.
Right, and most people aren't taking pictures for their photo album anymore. They're doing it either professionally or they're doing it to upload to Twitter or Facebook or something. And a 5-megapixel picture out of your camera is more than enough.
I read an article that talked about that scrapbooking is on the decline because, again, Facebook and the digital scrapbooks have now become such a big deal to use that nobody's using the old scrapbooking methods anymore.
Right.
And you and I talked about, we thought that we were about to see the end of the camera, and I don't think it's just the camera. We're about to see the end of the MP3 player because there is no reason anymore to have a separate little camera, a separate MP3 player, when you've got video or phones that are carrying 10-megapixel cameras in them.
Right.
Okay, so it's a big deal that these things had their time and their place. And they're getting replaced. They're going to get replaced. It's going to happen.
Yeah, it's just integrated stuff into your phone now.
We've got just a couple of minutes here. Doug and I will be leaving tomorrow, heading to CES. Now, I invite everyone, I mentioned this on the blog, watch the blog, watch the Facebook account. We are going to try to, at least once or twice, maybe more often, while we're at CES, to post some updates with some short interviews we're going to do. We've got the remote recording equipment with us. We're going to be able to record the interviews in nice quality and post them back up. We're taking editing software so we can do all of this. So we're going to try to get those up for you guys this week. I can tell you some of the stuff we're going to be looking at. We're going to be talking to AMD. I'm really excited to talk to AMD. They just recently released an update to the Fusion processor.
Uh-huh.
And they released an A8 that is unlocked as well as an A6 that is unlocked. I'm going to talk to AMD. I want to know if we're, because of the failure of the FX, if we might see the end of the pure standalone CPU from AMD and might not see them finally, and in my opinion, it's a smart move, shift focus to the pure APU development. So we're going to talk to AMD. We've got a conversation with Intel. That'll be cool. I want to talk to them about the GPU they're adding to Ivy Bridge, where they're taking that, if they're going to try to bring this up. Kingston, we got some real serious time that we're going to spend with Kingston and with Thermaltake to talk about the new products they're going to bring. We've got a couple of companies that make headphones and do sound. We've also got some time set aside for Prima Games. Now, Prima Games is the manufacturer of all these strategy guides. And we're excited for a lot of reasons for this, but this could actually, it may not to you guys sound like it'll accumulate into much. The potential is to be one of the best contacts we make at CES with Prima Games. So we're excited about it. Nero software.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be taking a look hopefully soon at the latest versions of Nero and some audio and video editing software that they're introducing for the homes, as well as DVD and CD burning software. Who else we have on the list?
I don't know. We've got a ton. I've stopped
Sapphire
trying to keep
for
track.
Video cards.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to try to upload some stuff. We may hit technical difficulties.
Corsair.
We've never done this from a remote before. At the very least, I would say watch the Facebook page. You should see lots of photos added to the wall. At the very least, we'll be taking pictures throughout the days.
Now, next week's show, we took three of our best unplugged segments from the previous show. These were interviews that have never aired before. These have only been available on the internet. We've taken these, we've done a little breakup on these, and we've put them together so that you guys can hear them. We've got an interview with the CEO of Komodo, and we're talking about antivirus software. We've also got a review of Komodo. We've got an interview with Jeff Robinson from In Control from Evil Geniuses,
right,
who's going to talk about professional gaming. And we've got an interview with, I can't remember his name, from Kingston, who talks about memory.
Right.
So we've got three great interviews. These are going to air next Sunday or next Saturday, so you'll be able to hear them here, because next Saturday we're going to be on a plane coming home. Now, the Saturday following is exciting because that's when we come in with all that neat stuff. That's when we bring you the CES show to Southern Illinois. So be sure to tune in for that. In the meantime, it's time for Doug and I to head out. Practice safe computing. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. We're out of here.